Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This is part two of my interview with Brooks Agnew. Completely different subject. We're going to talk about the rise of the Clinton crime syndicate. Just as interesting, though. If you haven't seen part one, Science of Consciousness and Hollow Earth Expedition, be sure to see that. But before we get into part two, I have a word from my sponsor. Have you had senior moments? There are three daily habits that are destroying your memories, and you will lose 10% of your brain by the age of 55 and 20% of your brain by the age of 75. It'll actually shrink if you do not do something about this. There is a free workshop that you can partake in where you'll learn what these three habits are, how to fix it, and how to regain your memories. There's a link below in the description on how to sign up. Be sure to sign up. It's free information. And I want to do a big shout out to my patrons and anyone that has been supporting the show with donations. Thank you so much. You are the heart and soul of keeping this operation going. Now let's get back into my interview with Brooks Agnew.
Well, let's get into the last book, the one that you just published.
Okay.
And it's a totally different subject. You just do so many amazing things, like I said, mind expanding. And this is a totally different subject. And I think a lot of us got dragged into, we learned a lot about the Clintons and just the corruption level. And I think we all got dragged into it because we were so horrified by a lot of what we learned. But you wrote a book called The Rise of the Clinton Crime Syndicate. Can you explain what that book is about?
Yeah. Anytime you're in business, and I am, and I have to go to Washington quite a few times to make the case for different regulations being taken away or put in place or whatever, eventually you're going to step onto or around what I call the Clinton blood trail. There is so much corruption. You can't turn on any form of media, especially alternative media. You can't turn it on without running into it. And it so affected me. I wrote a play, a screenplay about it. It was called Two Earths, One Race for Time. And it was actually the first volume of the Birth trilogy. And it sat there doing nothing from 2011 to the early part of 2015. When Donald Trump got on that escalator and came down and announced he was running for president, I went, wait a minute, whoa, 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 whoa. I think that's in the movie. So I went back, dug the screenplay out, and there it was. And I said, if that's the case, the rest of this is going to happen. So I don't have time now to make this into a movie. I can't raise the money. It's 10 years to get something to the big screen. So I said, I'm going to turn it into a book. So I did. Turned into three books called the Birth Trilogy. Well, I took that in a different direction, but something was lingering. This criminal aspect to it was lingering because as Donald Trump was running, this syndicate started coming out from behind the curtain. They started poking their head up out of the slime. Hey, wait a minute. We don't own this guy. This guy's not one of ours. He's going to change everything. And so this war started. And that's what this book is about. I go all the way back to the signing of the Constitution, why it was signed, and why it was totally unexpected. No civilization on earth predicted America. How can that be? How can that be that every prophet, every seer, every revelator missed the most powerful, wealthiest nation that the world has ever known? How did they miss that? Because the founding fathers already knew that history. They already read about that history. Everybody did. People learned to read by reading the Bible. And they decided they were going to choose a different future. So they formed America based on rights coming straight from God, liberty, freedom, you know, this kind of stuff. That was not in the plan. For 5,000 years before that, one man ruled this planet, and he did it from wooden ships. One king or another ruled the entire world.
And you're talking Rome.
Well, Rome and then Britain. You know, the sun never set on the British Empire. But it was basically one guy with his wooden ships that ruled the world. All of a sudden, that went away. All of a sudden, something new, a new direction the world was going in. And it started waking people up. What do you mean I have freedom? What do you mean I can choose what I want to be? I don't have to take an assignment from the royalty. It changed everything. And so for 241 years, the globalist elite, this syndicate, has been at war with America. And they have fought us on the battlefield a number of times and lost. And over each time, they get better and better at refining how they're going to take America down. When in 1933, Roosevelt established what I call the agency government. All the agencies, departments, bureaus, and administrations became the globalist government, run by giant global corporations. 83 years later, they're now so powerful that Congress does not run our country. It's run by them. And that's why right now we're in a very dangerous place, I maintain in the book, because the globalists realize, and they've been successful at doing this, it takes a major event. It takes a 9/11. It takes a world war. It takes something to soften the people of America to where they will give up their rights. We already gave up our right to privacy. We already gave up our freedom to move about unfettered, right? We're in a surveillance state. They're right now trying to undo the Second Amendment. And they will continue until all the amendments are gone and America doesn't exist anymore. And then they can get on with the same business of capturing the souls of the earth. And that's where we are right now. So that's what Charm of Favor. In fact, it's funny how the name came, because we were watching James Comey's testimony. And he was lying. We could see. Everybody could see he was lying. And yet, experienced prosecutors were sitting there on that bench asking him questions, watching him lie, and they accepted it. They let it go. Like, oh, it's so wonderful that you came today.
Why? Because they're all part of the crime cabal?
No, not all of them, but it is the charm of favor. That's what my editor said. You know, it's like he has a charm of favor on him, like somebody has a spell on him that whoever's around him just fawns over him and just believes everything that he says. And it's the same thing with Clinton. It's the same thing with Schiff. Same thing with Brennan and Clapper. And it went on and on. And I went, wow, that's the name of the book. So it's called Charm of Favor, a true story of the rise of the Clinton crime syndicate.
How does that charm of favor happen? Because with the Clintons, that's an obvious thing where they always say nothing sticks to them. They're just like this wrecking ball of evil, and nothing ever happens.
It's just die. Children die. I mean, people are brutally murdered in their hotel room, chopped to pieces in their own bathtub, stabbed in the chest, shot, burned, hung. Unbelievable how many bodies these two have buried, and nothing happens to them. And we're all frustrated with it. And that is why I wrote the book, because America needs to wake up. They need to see, once you start, and I'm good at laying out patterns. I'm a statistician. This is what I do for a living. Once I laid the dates out where you see where James Comey came from, where Loretta Lynch came from, where these individuals came from, what they were doing at the time for the syndicate and how they got promoted to positions of power, it becomes so clear, you cannot deny it. And I'm happy to say that the book went to number 4 on Amazon within 1 week, and it's been holding in the top 40 ever since. People are getting it.
Can you give us a little bit of the story of that, and so people have an idea of what they're, I mean, you've done already, but a little more about what they're going to learn in that book?
It's a series of, it looks like unrelated short stories, but as you begin to weave the dates together, you see somebody very powerful is in charge of all this. Several of the stories, one of them is about a man named William Ruckelshaus. You remember him?
Not really.
Yeah, that's not a name people remember. He is one of the most powerful men in the history of the United States. He started out as the head of the EPA way back in the days of Carter. Then he worked for Nixon. Then he worked for Ford. Then he worked for Reagan. Then he worked for Bill Clinton and George Bush and Barack Obama. And what his job was, first, he took over all the forests. Then he took over all the water in the western United States and sold it. Then he took over trash. You ever hear of a company called BFI? If you have a trash can emptied by a truck in the United States, chances are it's a part of BFI. He owns that. He put that together. So at the end of his reign, and this is all behind the scenes, but I bring it out so that you can see it. The United States seized control of 700 million acres of American wilderness. Everything, the gold, the water, the coal, the wood, the water, or the raw materials, everything, and mortgaged it. Mortgaged it for $10 trillion. And that's the debt that we're in right now. And if we default on that debt, the mortgage holders will come in and take that property.
And so you believe they set that up on purpose. We are going to default. People don't even know what this whole debt's about. And then they're going to purposely, that was all on purpose, so they could come in and take over the country.
You know how banks work. If you become
unfortunately,
you lose your job or something, the bank may come in and say, oh, I need a cosigner now. I need another piece of collateral because your risk has gone up. This is what the lenders did. This is what the lenders who were buying the American debt did. They said, you know, you're at risk because you don't have the growth to back this up. I'm going to need something real to back this up. And that's why they mortgaged all this stuff. And that's why Ruckelshaus pulled it all together and pulled it into the federal government, which is all illegal. It's all against the Constitution, but it was still done.
But why do we have to recognize something that's illegal?
Well, because there's a national consciousness that occurs. Most people go about their daily lives doing their thing. They don't really look up or look side to side. They're focused on their little world. But if enough people give enough attention to the story that we put forth in this book, it creates a national consciousness. And that makes the other side realize that their resonance is going to be conflicted with a national resonance. One thing about it, if the American people want something as a people, they get it.
We do. It's kind of interesting. Now, does the cabal follow this resonance concept? I mean, are they really keyed into it?
Absolutely. In fact, they require, where you go to work for a company, they don't require absolute loyalty. Like everything you eat, everything you do is aligned with the company. They don't. The syndicate does. It is a cabal. Some of my friends call it a cabal. But I say, you know, a cabal is kind of like a royal court where you have the king and then you have princes and then you have vassals. But that's a very tense kind of organization because everybody's wishing the king dies so they can take his place. A syndicate is different. A syndicate has a code, has a core, has oaths and covenants that you make that lock you into it. And you get your reward as long as you do your part. And for most of the people in this syndicate, they're satisfied with the reward. In one of the chapters, I talk about Bill Clinton. He has a conversation with one of my characters that I create to take you through this. His name is Lim Shun. I just made the name up. That's not a real person. But the situation is, and the reason I do it this way is so that I don't just tell this all from first person. or from third person omniscient. I put you in the room with those two having the conversation so you can hear it in their words, what they're talking about. And they're actually, in the book, they're planning mass shootings in order to force Americans to say, I don't want to have a gun anymore. I want to give up the guns. And as I was writing it, Las Vegas happened. And when after I published it, then, of course, Parkland happened. I mean, it was like I was racing ahead of reality, just a few steps ahead of it as I was writing this.
The book actually. Do you think people, there's enough consciousness that people know that a lot of these are planned?
I think it's getting out there. One of the things that I realized during the 2016 election was this dichotomy between what reality was being pushed at us all the time and what reality really was. I saw the polls and all the news actors saying, oh, Hillary's going to win, 98% chance. Trump doesn't stand a chance of a snowball in hell. But when I went to alternative media, YouTube, Periscope, whatever, I saw these enormous rallies. 20 people inside, 10,000 people outside, 50,000 people watching live on YouTube. And I went, there's no way. Look at the energy. What's going on here? So I said, let's tackle this from a Six Sigma statistical point of view. Where do the pollsters get their information? They call on the phone. But they call landlines. They always have. Well, when I started to do the demographic on who actually has landlines, 65 or older that own their own home. I said, well, that's not the demographic of America, but that's what the pollsters had to do. They couldn't call somebody with a Charlotte area code and get me in Chicago. They don't want to talk to somebody in Chicago. They want to talk to somebody in Charlotte. So they call landlines. Well, in 2012, that worked just fine. But in 2016, this changed from a cell phone to a smartphone. In 4 years, this is where people got their news. They were getting it from here. So I ran another survey of people that had smartphones. And I asked them, where do you get your news? Oh, I get it on my phone. So you don't watch TV? No, I hardly ever watch TV. They were getting it from Drudge Report, Newsmax, WorldNet Daily, all kinds of webcast radio programs, YouTube. So I asked them, who are you voting for? 85% of them said they were voting for Trump. So by the time I took 78%, which is the number of people that had smartphones compared to landlines, 85% of that and turned into electoral votes, I came up with 314 electoral votes. Trump won 305. So I said, what state has 9 electoral votes? How did I miss this? It was New Mexico. So I looked at New Mexico's voting precinct by precinct, 3 counties swung the state blue. Those 3 counties, all 3 counties had more votes than they have registered voters in those counties.
That was phenomenal research you did.
That was the 9 electoral votes. I was dead on the money, 314 electoral votes.
Well, and so, I think the alternative media has been really covering the Clinton crime syndicate very well. But Clintons are just one part of that picture.
Yes.
How can you give us some names that you talked about in the book?
Well, of course. I talk about Susan Rice, Clapper, Brennan, especially Samantha Power, who was the ambassador to the UN. She was unmasking as fast as the surveillance would come in. She would take that information to FISA, unmask the name, and disseminate it. She was an ambassador to the UN. What was she doing unmasking Americans' names in surveillance of the Trump administration?
Exactly.
Not at all. So she claims Somebody used my identification to do it. Not possible. To get in that room to do that is biometric. Only she could go in that room.
Well, now, do you connect it to the Bushes? Because you know, the cabal owns them all, right? They, until you're saying Trump is different.
Yes.
Have they owned it all the way since the Federal Reserve was formed, or when did they start owning these presidents?
In 1848, the Anti-Federalists became the Democratic National Committee. Within 20 years, they had come up with the Tariff of Abominations, which forced the 13 states to withdraw from the Union and caused that war, which was basically a banker's war. Lincoln did not want to sign the bank charter, and they needed him to sign that bank charter in order to have a central bank in the United States still. So they broke the 13 states away that were willing to deal with the transatlantic banks, and the Union had to end up fighting them to get them back into the Union, and decimated them, just decimated them. Of course, when it was done, he still wouldn't do it, so they killed him. And the next president signed the charter. And it goes through history like that. I go through these historical events. One of the ones is 9/11. Before 9/11, if you wanted to see your family off at the airport, you could just go to the airport with them, see them off right at the gate of the airplane, or be there when the door opens and they get off the plane. It was like that everywhere in the world. So the National Defense Authorization Act, which makes up the Patriot Act and all this other stuff, was written years before 9/11. Years. It was thousands and thousands of pages. But Americans would never go along with that. No way. 9/11 was planned not just to knock those buildings down, but to knock us down so that we would say, okay, 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 whatever it takes, just make us safe. I thought you would feel that way. Here's this set of regulations we have. And we gave up our rights just like that. Everywhere. I've flown to Egypt, Tibet, everywhere. We're searched against our will. Everywhere. Even in the United States, all over. We're searched against our will. We would never have agreed to that in 2000 or 1999 or 1998. But we openly and easily did it in 2001. And it would not have mattered if Gore won or Bush won, because that was in place by the syndicate. Both Gore and Bush were part of the syndicate. It would not have mattered one way or the other. But when Trump ran, he's not part of the syndicate, and it is not going their way right now.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Now, how can we recognize if a politician is part of the syndicate or not? I mean, are senators, because there's obviously senators that aren't. Rand Paul is obviously not part of the syndicate, but there seems to be senators that just go along with everything. So how do you know when somebody's involved and not?
Well, that's why the Federal Election Commission is there, because they want to know where your money comes from to run. So they go around it by saying, well, I didn't get the money. It went to a political action committee that ran commercials on my behalf, but that wasn't my money. So it gets very murky and hard to understand. Like, wait a minute, I thought net neutrality was a good thing. No, it's a bad thing. The name is good, but the action that they're trying to do is bad. I don't get it. I'm confused. The way to keep it straight, always look at who are the enemies of this person. If that person has the right enemies, they're the right person.
Who are the right enemies?
Well, the right enemies would be establishment, would be the Schumers, the Pelosis. It would be the people that we know are generals inside that syndicate. If they're endorsing this person in any way, you know they're part of the syndicate.
Who's part of the syndicate who are Republicans?
There are a lot of them. John McCain is one. Flake is one. As far as senators, there are lots of congressmen. I've been to D.C. numerous times. Mitch McConnell. Even guys like Marco Rubio. These are all senators, but there are lots of congressmen that are there. Look at the last time I went to Washington, I was talking about energy. I was talking to the Department of Transportation, and Nancy Pelosi was there with her entourage of junior congressmen. Some had one term, some two terms. all of them are part of the syndicate.
And they all have to pledge to be part of the syndicate.
Yes, they do. And it is pretty sickening when you think about the oath and the covenant and the ritual they have to go through.
What do they have to go through?
It involves pedophilia. It involves mutilation. It involves acts that they would not do as decent human beings before this point. And after they do it, they're owned because it's filmed. It's kept on record. And if you ever cross them, you ever decide, I'm done with this, I'm out, you're going to be betrayed. And we see that. John Conyers, Al Franken, it goes on and on and on. When these guys end their usefulness to the syndicate, they will be discarded.
Yeah, because they just bring up whatever they want and then they can get rid of them. Now, are you seeing pushback because you've wrote this book?
Not yet. I am pretty mobile. I have had my Twitter pretty much wiped out. I documented it, 1,599 Twitter followers in the last 28 days. I took a screenshot of it off my analytics and I posted it on Twitter. I see you. I see what you're doing. So conservatives are being expunged from the popular media, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. But I don't think that's that bad of a thing. It's a private company. They can do what they want to
do. Are you really a conservative? I mean, you just seem like you're someone who's trying to figure stuff out. I really don't like this left-right thing because it's like, it's people trying to bring goodness and truth to the world is suddenly a conservative and everybody else who's clueless is on the left. I mean, I just don't understand.
I'm more of a libertarian in the sense that government, especially central government, the federal government, should only be doing certain things that the Constitution says it should do. But it's doing so much more, and it's consuming everything we make, and it's providing us nothing. National defense is not enough. The federal government is buying votes. They have a constituency made of people who are dependent upon them for money.
Well, the problem is when the government becomes big like this, that you lose your freedoms, they become tyrannical. And sure. That's why we're worried about it.
Yeah. Net neutrality, which is a totally deceptive name. It has to do with Title I and Title II of FCC regulations. Under Title I, it's basically federal government hands off. It's states can regulate it, but the central federal government is a light touch. That's why the internet became what it is. That's why it's free enterprise. Companies and technologies that are successful will succeed. Those that aren't and aren't accepted by the people fail. That's the way it should be done. That's the way it should be done. And it will constantly be moving. Otherwise, we would have never got PayPal. We wouldn't have eBay or Amazon or any of that stuff if the government had been regulating it. Now, Title II makes it a federal utility. There are no federal utilities in our country, not like that. The federal government doesn't control water, doesn't control in your pipes, doesn't control electricity. It controls the grid, but only for safety. This is a light touch, which means very few regulations. Now, the proponents of it would say, oh, we want the federal government to come in and force them to give us high-speed internet in a area that has one person per square mile. That's not very profitable. The reality is if you want high-speed internet, you need to move somewhere where high-speed internet is. That's part of the utility. That's part of the value that that company invested in to get that return. And that's free enterprise. Free net neutrality is not what they say it is. It is an effort by the syndicate to control our internet in our country. All of it. Not just the bandwidth, the content.
Well, they're already controlling the content to a large degree. I mean, this last month or two is... Well, it started years ago, but they're getting obnoxious and just in your face in the last few months.
It's not the government. It's the companies themselves. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, they're run by radical leftists.
So do you think that they're just politicians doing it and have different ideas on policies? Or do you think there's actually the crime syndicate is behind that?
I think the syndicate's behind it. And it's the money. It's the patronage that they get. Now, what that means and what it should mean in free enterprise, when one company makes you unwelcome, you don't quit. You go looking for another company. Or if a company doesn't exist, you make a company that accommodates those people. So guess what? Gab, Mines, all these different companies, BitChute, they're starting to pop up. And what will happen is in very short amount of time, believe me, very short amount of time, there will be a migration. And YouTube might go the way of MySpace if they're not careful.
They have to be careful. You can't treat your customers like crap and expect to stick around. And if it gets too obnoxious, then it will.
One adjective to that. You don't treat your paying customers like that. There are lots of customers on YouTube, but they don't buy anything. The people that do stuff, that earn money, we're the ones that buy. We're the ones that buy ads. We're the ones that pay for the ads to run on those programs.
Well, and I know like my show, I've been affected. I have a lot of really, really smart professionals who listen to my show. I have the type of people want to get to. So you have to be careful when you're messing around with shows who attract the top professionals.
Your patronage is sitting there with a laptop and a debit card. It's the best type of customer to have. So this is primarily why the leftists want to kick you and other libertarians off the air, because they don't want that ideology to have the money.
But you can't not have it. They just do. I mean, the people are too smart. They're not going to follow somebody who doesn't have they're thirsty for this knowledge. They're thirsty for trying to figure things out. That's why they watch my show, because I have people like you on it who are giving mind-expanding ways of thinking. And that's what I do. I try to bring on people who can change the way they think and have them learn. Those type of people seek this out.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. And what they want to do is keep that kind of enlightenment away. And so they're influenced. And I have no idea why the CEO of any company would come out and make a political statement like, if you're a member of the NRA, you're not welcome here anymore. Well, excuse me, you just took about 5 million paying customers and told them they're not welcome in your store
anymore? That's just incredible. Who said that?
Well, lots of CEOs have done it that have come out and said, if you're part of the NRA, you're either not going to get a discount anymore or don't buy my product.
How do they know?
It's just a political statement for
them. It's stupid. Why would they even, if I was selling a product like that and I'm running a company, I would stay clear of some. Who cares who you sell to?
Let me say this. If you're a shareholder in that company, do you want the CEO saying, hey, 5 million customers, you're not welcome here anymore? Wait, what's going to happen to the value of my stock?
That's stupid.
Exactly.
That's a definition of dumb. From a business standpoint, you don't do that. And if something's really controversial and you're selling Band-Aids or something, I don't care what they believe. I just want to make the best quality Band-Aid.
Yeah. How many people fly Delta Airlines? I mean,
yes.
You realize only 13,000 people in the last year took advantage of an NRA discount on their tickets. So why would Delta come out and say, we're no longer going to issue the NRA discount? What? How much money did they actually give away in the entire year? $13,000, maybe? Why would they come out and say that? Why would they...
Because they're dumb. Because you wouldn't do that. They wanted to. They have to be part of the crime syndicate in some way, because you just wouldn't do that. It makes no sense. I could see them getting rid of the NRA discount, but I would do it really, really quietly, because you don't want to be part of the debate.
Well, how many real sources of broadcast media are there? in the free world. Six owners that own all the radio stations.
Well, from what I understand is those six owners actually funnel back to one.
Okay. So you get one propaganda. You want to run a full-page ad in the Washington Times or Washington Post or New York Times that says something they don't want the public to hear? They're not going to sell you the ad. You can't go to another newspaper with that kind of circulation because it doesn't exist. If you want to talk about Charm of Favor on a national television program, I haven't been able to do it yet. No one will give
me five. Isn't that interesting? And I had Catherine Austin Fitz talk about the money that's missing from the government, right? She was saying that there was about six something trillion that she's been able to document. And Professor Skidmore from Michigan State University said, I don't believe this, whatever. I'm going to challenge her. And he went and looked it up. She goes, oh, wow, she's right. And he called her. And he ended up having his whole class do the research. And not only was he able to prove what she was saying is right, they found a lot more. Now it's over 21 trillion. And that's just from two departments, the Department of Defense and HUD. There could be from all, you know, other places as well. And why isn't that? And he put out a report and, you know, it got a little bit of coverage, but why isn't that the most important thing hitting the news? Why is that not, you know, it's like, hello. And
well, it could be the Charm of Favor, but it could be orders too. We don't want this to get legs.
Well, I'm sure that this is, it's planned, because anybody with a brain knows that that kind of news is really relevant. And I actually think shame on universities, all the economic departments across the country should be looking at this stuff and saying, yes, what is going on? If they are really good at what they do, they should be looking at it. And the fact that they don't know is shameful. It's absolutely shameful that the university, the economic departments, the business schools are not looking at this stuff. We should be mad as hell at our universities. But
we are. But I mean, look at the unions, look at the tenure, look at the Marxist element that makes up most of the universities.
But this doesn't have to be a Democrat, Republican, Marxist, libertarian. Money's stolen. It's a crime.
It's true.
You know, it's a crime. You're hurting everybody. And shame on all these people who claim that they're experts and not acknowledging this. I think it's a complete crime. It's a sin against your children. It's a shame. I can get on my high horse, but the fact that people are not picking this up and going, what is going on? You know, damn you, you stole from us. You're taking away our future. Shame on all these universities.
We have mayors who are saying federal law doesn't apply in my city. We have bankers. We have all this, you know, crime that's going on. Who coined the term hate speech? There's no such thing as hate speech. There's speech. If it's offensive to you, turn the channel, go away. But you can't deny somebody the right to say what they want to say.
The only time it crosses the line is when that speech incites violence. And beyond that, everybody should have the right to talk.
And if you're inciting violence, then you can be arrested for inciting violence. But
exactly.
When violence comes to that speech, the speech is not inciting the violence. It's Antifa or OFA or these militant organizations that come there to break windows, turn over cars, and burn things. That violence is not caused by the speech.
Well, unless the speech is like, do this, go and break the windows and do all this stuff. I mean, I don't know. They always use the screaming fire in a theater that causes a tramp, you know, what do you call it? Trampede or stampede. And
modern hate speech. Let's look at what the South African Parliament did 2 weeks ago. Passing by an overwhelming majority, like 241-83, that all land, all assets owned by white people will be expropriated without payment and given to poor black people.
Yeah, see, that's stealing. Now, if they stole it in the first place, then
they bought it. They came hundreds of years ago, bought land, developed it, put in roads, dams, schools, irrigation systems, experimented with the hybridization of plants to get things to grow in that area, built herds, put a rail to move their goods and services around. And now it's wealth, it's profitable, and they want it. And so they're going to nationalize it and take it. And it's sad because South Africa was this close to crossing the line from a developing nation into a developed nation. They stood in a place that could have led all of Africa into the future. And now they have slid back into this tribal genocide.
Oh, that's too bad. Sense. Yeah, it's we need to raise our awareness. We need to raise our consciousness. And we need to be at a different level, right? And accept all human beings. You are amazing. I got to tell you, this was an absolutely treat for me to talk to you. I definitely have to have you back. And I assume you have just thousands of followers for your radio show, especially if this is what you're talking about all the time.
I've been on the air for 14 years. It grows. It gets up, close to six figures, and then it slides back down as competitors come in and people move on and do different things. But I enjoy it because it gives me, 3 hours a week to talk about the mysteries of the universe and the earth. And if people are interested in hearing me talk about it, they can come and listen each Sunday night at 8 Eastern.
And then do you have a website as well?
Yeah, it's xsquaredradio.com. If you can't remember the name, just put it in Google. Trust me, everything that I do is out there. There's no privacy anymore, and I'm not afraid of it.
It is what it is, right?
Person in the world.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Sarah. Thanks for asking me. I really enjoyed myself.